All righty. Let the record show that the Hess meeting convened at 1:43, and that the following members were present: Representative Sisna, Representative Gardner, Representative Seaton, and myself, Wilson. And Kelly Burnett is our house recording person.
Yep.
Luke. Luke Woodruff is our LIO moderator, and Becky Rooney is our committee aide. Please turn off your cell phones if you have them, and don't put them on vibrate. Please turn them all the way off because it interferes with our electronics over here. And we have Senate Bill 212, Medical Assistance Eligibility, on the agenda for today. And I just saw Senator Davis, and they had a call on the Senate, and so she couldn't come. So, Tom, if you would like to go ahead and Tom Obermeyer explain the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the House Hess Committee, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you today is Senate Bill 212. It's an act relating to eligibility requirements for medical assistance for certain children, pregnant women. This particular bill is called the Denali Kid Care Bill, following the SCHIP Children's Insurance Program, which is recognized nationally throughout the country. Alaska is participating at a rate currently below about 41 other states. We're currently at 175% of federal poverty guideline for Denali Kid Care. It had been frozen at this rate in 2003 when the effective rates in 4 years later dropped to about 154%, or about 50% below the 200% that it was originally set at when this program began. The current bill is to bring back the other half of the 2,500 children and 400 pregnant women that fell off the rolls as a result of the freeze, and half of them were brought back last year with Senate Bill 27 up when we raised it again to 175%. This bill brings back essentially the other half, about 1,277 children, 218 pregnant women, so that we will now be able to assist all those children who will not be seen have regular health care or have any type of insurance at all. And I think you have enough information on your desk. I'm sure you're very familiar with this program to recognize that the federal government pays at an enhanced rate on Denali Kid Care on the SCHIP program. It's about two-thirds, up to 70%. If costs exceed the SCHIP funds that are made available to the states, claims are simply reimbursed at the lower regular Medicaid rate, resulting in reduced federal revenues. That's an overview of the bill. I don't know if you need any other details. I will say that I think the fiscal notes on this bill, there are three of them from the various sections, are very good. If you also note the funding source, you will see that the federal receipts are about two-thirds in every single case, whether it is behavioral health, Medicaid services, or health and social services. And that also includes, you know, the assistance that's needed from the department in providing this additional care.
Tom, would you so you mentioned that if they decide not to fund SCHIP, and there has been concerns about that over the last couple of years. So what is the difference if it would fall back? How much would the state have to kick in then?
Well, the regular Medicaid rate was about 50%. I understand we have department people here, but it dropped slightly below that, maybe 48%. But there's still going to be a tremendous federal support as to roughly half instead of maybe up to 70% at the enhanced rate if these children fall under this, fall short of SCHIP funds that are allocated. Essentially, I don't remember the details on the allocation, but I believe it's on population. And so it would adversely affect Alaska as other states if the federal government doesn't come through with the funds.
But you don't know how much that is.
I don't know how much that is. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Sharon, Representative Sisnes, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would appreciate your giving us, if you could, how many children were, when we dropped down from the original 200%, how many children really were lost and were left uncovered? Do you have that number there?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, I believe the fiscal notes indicate that we had, I think we lost about 2,500 to 3,000 children in the system. We had about 7,600 as of 2006. So the number, the aggregate number, I don't know, but the loss was substantial, and I think the department could address that. These numbers are all important because I think you may have noticed that the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, which also supports this bill, indicated that that there's tremendous pressure to support these children who have no other way of addressing medical assistance, and without this, they will either go to emergency rooms, which is much more expensive, or they will wind up not having care and facing additional health expenses later in life, which is also expensive to the state as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Why don't we have the department come up and maybe they can answer some of the questions that have been just asked. John Sherwood and Ellie Fitzgerald.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ellie Fitzgerald, and I'm the Director for Public Assistance.
And I'm John Sherwood, and I'm in the Office of the Commissioner with the Medicaid and Healthcare Policy.
Okay. Do you remember the questions that were asked? The one question was, how many children dropped off when it slid from, 75% back to, because it was a set amount, and so how many did we lose during that time? And then if this goes on, how many would we gain? And then if Washington decides to not fund it, and that's always that possibility, how much would the state have to kick in?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't tell you the number of children that dropped off as a result of freezing the Denali Kid Care levels. It's kind of a dynamic process because there's other things going on in our caseload, and we can't always attribute a reduction or an increase directly solely to an eligibility action. I do know that we anticipated when we brought this back, adding about almost 1,300 kids and a little over 200 pregnant women through this, but I don't have that number for you.
Okay. All right. Representative Sisna?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You read my mind. What I try to get to in all of this is the whole issue of when we lose programs like this for families. And it is kind of coincidental that at the very same time that we lost, that we froze the program, the costs were going up for health care to really pretty staggering amounts. And what appears to have happened in my community is this great rise in homeless families. And what we know in the whole issue of bankruptcies is that now the largest reason for bankruptcies is healthcare costs that are driving people to that. Does the department ever look at that kind of thing, that we need to know why we are having these problems in our communities, and that actually just doing something like making sure the kids are healthy could have enormous cost benefits for the state?
Representative Siska, through the chair, I'd like to come back to kind of clarify where we were and where we're at now, perhaps the numbers of enrollment. Last year when Senate Bill 27 passed, we expected that there would be approximately 1,277 kids come back on the program as a result of raising the limits that had previously been frozen. And as of this February, 2 months ago, of those 1,277, we had 1,100 kids come back on. And these are the kids that are in the higher income groups, which is what SCHIP covers, not some of the typical Medicaid coverage groups that covers families with lower income. So we have picked up a number of kids that may have been disenrolled as a result of freezing the standards. Pregnant women, we're not seeing the numbers we projected. We had thought there would be about 200 or so pregnant women, and those rates are not growing at the rate we thought. So, you know, to get back to kind of what's changed since Senate Bill 27 has gone into effect, we are bringing kids on as a result of that. And we project that we would bring on about the same amount if this bill were to pass.
One follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other part of this that I'm really wondering about is also this new program and with this legislation, it appears as if one of the parts, and I didn't hear this in the discussion, is that this bill is covering more people who might be able to get this service. It looks like it's covering a larger number of people who are, for instance, in institutions that might not be caught. At least in the first page, it looks like that. Are there additional people that are covered besides just the changing of the rate of those who qualify in this legislation?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, the legislation reproduces the entire list of all those presently eligible for Medicaid under optional categories, and the only actual change to our eligibility occurs on page 4, where we change the percentage of poverty for the very specific groups in the Dallas we're talking about, the children and pregnant women. Those other categories listed in this bill, it's just the drafting convention. They're listed here. They're already receiving care at those levels.
Okay. And follow-up,
President Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if, in fact, some of those people actually had a higher income, would it not affect them too? I mean, there may be, for instance, if someone is blind or has one of the other impairments, but they make too much money, they have an asset, wouldn't this cover them more likely?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, Medicaid is a categorical eligibility. We have different standards for different categories. A number of these categories are different. They don't involve children or pregnant women necessarily. So most of the categories per se wouldn't be affected by these changes. If there is another category that covers children and pregnant women, then some children and pregnant women would be captured in would become eligible through this change. But.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Roses.
Thank you, and you may have stated, someone may have already covered this before I came in, but last year and the beginning of this year when we were having discussions, and certainly in the budget subcommittee, we were having discussions around the SCHIP funds and the reauthorization by Congress in terms of what level they were going to fund the SCHIP program. And I had attended a conference in Chicago, and we were warned by all of the speakers that came there, cautioned us about increasing levels of coverage or expanding the eligibility, and until we knew for sure what those funding levels were going to be. Where are we with that now, and what does it look like the projections are going to be?
Chair, Representative Roses, we're still in a period of great uncertainty. Congress extended the SCHIP program through March of 2009, but they did not reauthorize the program, so we don't know what funding for the SCHIP program will look like after March of 2009. Alaska has its SCHIP program is the Medicaid expansion, so if we don't have adequate funding through SCHIP, then we default to the regular Medicaid match rate, which is we expect to be 50%, which that's the floor for the federal portion is 50%, and we expect to be at the floor in the near future.
May I follow up?
Follow up, Representative Roses.
Thank you. Well, that leads me to a couple of other questions. When they granted the extension but didn't actually do the level of appropriation, was it extended at the same level, same percentage, and same funding that it was before? Or was it increased or decreased?
Through the chair, it was extended at the same level of funding. Historically, Alaska hasn't, its base funding hasn't covered all of our SCHIP. We've received supplemental funding through the years. But even with the base level of funding, there's the potential for shortfall.
And can you give us any kind of an indication when you say the potential for shortfall? Do you have any idea what you're looking at in terms of a percentage?
The chair, I apologize. I don't have the current figure.
Yeah, I realize that's tough because it's, you know, like trying to push Jell-O up a hill, you know, when you don't know what you're getting from them, and constantly when you're trying to get, you start to build a sustainable program and then they ratchet back the funds, because, I mean, sitting on that, and several of us do, sitting on that subcommittee, we had to constantly appropriate more money from our general fund to cover the cutbacks that they've made in the other programs. So what I hear you saying is if the SCHIP authorization doesn't go through, then it becomes imperative on the Medicare Medicaid funds to be able to cover that difference, and then you're looking at a 50% reimbursement rate as opposed to what we're currently are experiencing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct. With the exception of our IHS beneficiaries who receive care in the IHS system, that's 100% federal. So the actual percentage, you know, average percentage moves around depending on how all the bills come through. But basically, that's correct. We would default to the 50% rate.
And if I recall, if I may follow up, if I recall, the percentage of ratcheting back that we saw in most of those areas was somewhere near 6 to 8%. Do you recall that as being accurate in terms of the amount of money that the federal government was supposed to or in the past had appropriated? They ratcheted back by at least, I think it was either 6% or 8%, and then we therefore had to pick up the difference if we were going to maintain the program. So do we have any information or any inkling as to what they think they may be doing next year? Are we looking at the possibility of them ratcheting back again in terms of what they're doing with the 2009 budget that they're building?
Through the chair, I think there's still a great deal of uncertainty. You know, we always try and remain optimistic and hope that we will get adequate funding. There's certainly a lot of support nationally to adequately fund the SCHIP program, but we honestly don't know what we're going to get. It's likely going to be resolved under a new administration with a new Congress. So that adds another element of uncertainty to an already confusing situation.
Madam Chair, this isn't a question, but it's just sort of a summation of the statements that I made before I asked the questions, and that was when we attended the national conference, these are exactly the issues we were talking about a year and a half ago. And one of the things that they cautioned against was trying to ratchet up programs or expand programs to bring more eligibility on. And at some point in time, we were even discussing dependents, older dependents that would be allowed to come under this program. And we were advised by, and this was a nonpartisan group, we were advised by everyone that at that conference, that you've got to be very cautious in how you proceed until we know where this is going, until we have some certainty as to where the support is going to fall in terms of the federal government. And we just, many of us just went through a dialogue on the floor about our operating budget. And we were talking about how we've inflated the budget and how we've gone out and done things we shouldn't be doing that aren't sustainable. And we're sitting here looking at a situation that probably is going to have two or three fiscal votes go with it, not knowing how much money we're going to get from the federal government, whether or not it's going to be anything sustainable. We don't even know if the SCHIP is going to be authorized. It may have to go over into the other funds. I have a very, very difficult time addressing a bill and trying to do it in 30 minutes that has these kind of far-reaching ramifications in terms of delivering health care. This is a very tough one for me. I support the concept. I think we need to do everything we can to make sure our kids are healthy. It provides for healthier adults. But I don't know what it is I'm trying to buy. And so I have a real hard time with this. So is this supposed to be referred to finance when we're through with it? Is this supposed to?
No, this just we were the only
committee of referral?
Yes. Just a minute, I would like to recognize that Representative Keller and Representative Roses have joined us some time ago. And you had a question, Representative Stephen?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, on the question of money, is this an addition to the budget then?
Maybe you could answer that. Is it in any of our budgets so far?
Madam Chairman, it's my understanding that there is money that was amended in the operating budget in the likelihood that this bill would pass, that there was an amendment to the operating budget to include the cost should this bill pass.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Keller.
It is really there is one question. What is the income level that qualifies? If we go up to 200%, have you talked about that before I got here? But
no,
what a family of one, a family of two, children, family of three children, if we go up to 200%, what does that do in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, for a family of one, 200% of the federal poverty level is $26,000. For a family of two, it's $35,000 a year. Family of three, $44,000. Family of four, $53,000. That's the range of incomes we're talking about.
At
200% of poverty, and that's gross income. That's before taxes, before any significant deductions.
Madam Chair,
I think Representative Sisna was next, and then
on that issue.
Okay, Representative.
I don't think family of one really matters here because we're talking about the children of the working poor. So in terms of a family of one, two, that's not a child's not a head of household. So
one child is what I asked. Three, family of three.
Through the chair, to clarify, we do have situations where children are living in households where other individuals' incomes are not considered, and we use a family of one in those cases. If you were living with a grandparent, for instance, or an aunt or an uncle, we would still have a household of one if there was one child in the house. But you're correct. Typically, we don't have household of one child, and with pregnant women, the household is always at least two, counting the needs of the unborn.
Thank you.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate Representative Romers' reminding us about our comments on the floor here just a little time ago. And I actually was thinking very, very hard at that point about this piece of legislation. And one of the things, and I wish that we had some medical doctors here in the room, we might, that could speak to exactly what could happen if for 1 year we had a program that had some really strong preventive kinds of messages built into it, so that putting on an intent statement that really asks for the department to really be focused on the preventative side of service delivery on this. It seems to me that having 1 year, say it goes, we lose everything this next year, having these people get services for 1 year, if in fact in that 1 year, as the baby is born, mom gets the person coming to her telling her what she can do to have this baby be a healthy baby, that's what I have read numbers of studies that say that's the most effective thing you can do for long-term benefits. And that's what we do not have and what we are not putting in place. And that's where we've got to go, because we're not going to have this kind of money in the future that we've got now. But for 1 year, for the people that this allows there to be help for, if in fact our programs are really good ones and we have the incentives in place, and we're really trying to do this the best we can, I think there'd be real benefits.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
On that point?
On that point, Representative.
Well, if it's in the operating budget, it isn't in for 1 year. If we pass this bill to 200%, it isn't in for 1 year. This changes our statute. So if you're going to do it as a one-year funding mechanism, would it have to been done in either a supplemental budget, or would it have been somehow had to been put in, like we did before with the one-time funding for education last year, until we built a mechanism? We did it as part of a capital request. But if it's in the operating budget and we pass this piece of legislation, the only way you're going to ratchet back down, if you decided it didn't work or didn't help, would be to pass another piece of legislation. This isn't a one-year fix. This is a permanent fix.
Representative Keller?
To add to that, three or four years ago, there was an attempt, I'm sure some of you remember, to reduce the percentage, not increase it. And we listened to hours and hours and hours of testimony from people that built their lives on the amount that the benefit was going to be. And it was a painful process. I remember several just being absolutely broken up because of the fact that they had planned their life based on the amount of health care they're going to get through the Denali Kid Care, so please don't reduce it. And personally, this is too fast. We needed time to discuss this, the effect of the I'm going to call it an entitlement, even though it's children's health. I do understand the value of investing there, but I would just request that we don't act too quick on this.
Reverend Gardner.
Madam Chair, I'm pretty much stunned. I mean, we're a HESS committee. We focus on prevention. We've done a lot of work trying to focus on prevention. And the root of health prevention, health problems, is you start with childhood, with pregnant women and with children. This is something that currently is paid 70% by the feds. If that program, the SCHIP program, isn't renewed, it's a 50% match. It's something we're a wealthy state. We're saving billions and we're spending billions more, and yet currently we rank 41st out of 50 states in the health, what we provide to the children of the working poor for health care coverage. And remember this, if they don't have health insurance, either they don't get health care immediately and it costs more down the road and they end up in the emergency rooms, the hospitals. In the past year, let's see, we know from hospital financial data that Alaska's write-offs increased by 55% over the last year compared to 14% nationally. In 1 year, the write-offs for uncompensated emergency room care, somebody's paying for that, and it's people who are paying hospital bills, and it's the state participation. 41 states allow participation at families over 200% at 200%, and some at 300% of the poverty level. And even at 175%, we're still the fourth most stringent eligibility in the country. We know that health care costs are higher in Alaska than elsewhere, and what we're, you know, even to me, this is just a no-brainer that we should pass this. It's already in the operating budget that's passed. I don't see how anybody who sits on the health HESS committee could not support this effort.
And I'm sorry, but you can all hear the bells ringing. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to recess to the call of the chair. Yesterday, I thought we would have plenty of time to do this, because yesterday when they said it was going to be in 20 minutes or something, it was 3 hours. So I figured we'd have plenty of time. So we'll recess to the call of the chair. There's 10 people that want to testify. And I'm sorry for everybody, but the bells are ringing and we need to go.
Madam Chair.
Recess for now. Who else? Calling the Hess meeting back to order, and let the record show that it is 7:54, and on April 11th, 2008, and members present are Representative Cisna, Representative Gardner, Representative Seaton, and myself, Wilson. We do have a quorum to conduct business, and Kelly is still with us. Becky is still with us. However, we have a different LIO monitor, and it's Jake Wade. So welcome. Jake, this is the first time you've been with us, isn't it? So thank you. Anyway, please shut your telephones off, and don't put them on vibrate, because that interferes with our stuff. So what I'd like to do is represent this, or Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to let everyone that's here to testify know that we're at very short time, and I'm ready to make a motion to move the bill out of committee. But if we get held up in testimony, it's going to be difficult. So if people have information to get us that we should change and not move the bill out of committee, I'd appreciate their testimony. Otherwise, appreciate being able to just move into that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. And we do have 5 people online. So if you can keep your comments very, very brief, we'll get out of here. We're supposed to go back on the floor in 5 minutes. And Pat Heffley. Pat from Search. Are you online, Pat?
Yes, I am. Thank you for your opportunity to spend a minute with you folks tonight. Thank you for your service tonight. I know you're all tired. I was going to say a lot of things, but I'll do it in a minute. The questions that were being discussed earlier certainly create a lot of uncertainty with regard to not knowing what you were obligating yourself to, and I know that that is a concern. I really want to express the fact that as a student of healthcare financing myself and spent 35 years in Alaska, that in essence what is not being discussed is the cost elsewhere in the budget when you don't do this. It is so the question really isn't, are we worried and uncertain and should we vote, you know, not to do this? It should be, by voting to have these people included, do we save money in housing, in courts, in police work, emergency room visits, and elsewhere? And I can tell you, as a student of healthcare financing, the least amount of money you'll save by spending a dollar here for this population will be $6 to $7 in some costs somewhere else. I know that you are the Hess committee, but you may not know about the costs that come out elsewhere, or you may. So I would really ask that you consider the fact that you, by saying no, you're really just offsetting your costs to some other department or some other program. I wish I could say more, and I just wish you luck in your deliberations this evening.
Thanks, Pat. I don't see any questions. Brenda Miller? Hear those bells ringing? They're calling us now.
This is Brenda Moore, and I will pass. I just would like to see it moved out of the committee, yes.
Okay, thank you, Brenda. Christina Cleave?
The School Nurses Association. Hello?
Yes, we're...
I just really want to echo, thank you very much for holding this again, and I really encourage you to pass this out and get it to the floor to vote. I've seen several children of working parents receive essential medical care that we would not have received if it hadn't been for Denali Kid Care. And these are hardworking families that do not seek any other government entitlements of any kind, and many are small business owners and their employees who are basically one health care crisis away from bankruptcy. It's very frustrating for school nurses to see people who have previously qualified come to them and say, we can no longer get this care for our kids that we did 2 or 3 or 5 years ago.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please pass this.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I just want to remind the testifiers, if we take too long on this bill, it's not going to pass. So unless you have an objection, I suggest that you let us get on with the vote.
Patricia Center? Pat Center?
Yes, I'm just encouraging you to pass the bill.
Thank you, Pat. Lori Morris?
Alaska Human Services Coalition is just encouraging passage of the bill to the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online? Okay, then we will close testimony online. Is there anyone here that feels a need? Okay, I'm going to close testimony. Madam Representative Chair. Seaton.
Oh. Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill number 212 with any individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
All right. Hearing no objection, so moved. So Senate Bill 212 is now moved out of committee.
Yeehaw.
And if we'll see if we can get
Get
it gone to the next place. But we have to get signatures, and then we can adjourn. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for coming.